I spent my 60th birthday on 11-11-11 in the Grand Canyon in order to finally see a California condor. Heading to the Grand Canyon in November was an act of faith. Faith that the weather wouldn't turn horrible, and faith that my line of sight would actually intersect with the flight path of one of the few existing California condors in Arizona. We made it to Des Moines our first night and woke to almost a foot of snow and trees that had crashed down upon several cars in our motel parking lot. That seemed ominous, but our car was spared and we made it to Flagstaff and then to our motel in Tusayan, just outside the national park, on the eve of my birthday without problems. Russ and I started out my birthday hiking here and there along the South Rim, which was beautiful despite the woefully overcast sky. When the visitor center opened, we headed there to get suggestions about where to find the birds. The woman at the desk said we should come back in March. That wasn't helpful at all, but I had no intention of getting discouraged. All day I kept my eyes to the murky skies, without luck. The daily program about condors was held at 3 p.m. The woman giving the talk, a delightful and knowledgeable ranger named Alyssa Shala, told us that it had already snowed a few times this fall in the canyon, and most of the condors had retreated to lower elevations further north, especially in the Vermilion Cliffs National Monument area in the border area between Arizona and Utah. There were still two nestlings in the Grand Canyon National Park. They were 6 months old, but were not expected to be taking their first flight for another week or two. One was in a cave in a nearby formation called the Battleship, but the cave was on the opposite face, impossible to see from any vantage point on the South Rim. We could watch for their parents to return with food, but that happens only once every day or two, and sometimes a parent may even be gone for 4 or 5 days. But Alyssa wasn't at all discouraging. She said it was possible we'd spot one of the parents, but also said that our best chance would be at the Vermilion Cliff site outside the park, where the Peregrine Fund releases them. This area has milder winter weather than in the canyon, and that's what the birds prefer when it gets cold. Each bird covers a vast area, sometimes 100 miles in a single day, but it was certainly worth the shot. The next morning the sky was brilliant blue and there were high winds, exactly the conditions that draw condors into the sky as we drove to Vermilion Cliffs. We missed our turn onto a tiny dirt road that leads to the site and instead found ourselves at the entrance to the Kaibab National Forest at the very moment when two condors were flying overhead. Even though they were very high up, condors are huge enough with their 22-foot wingspan that I got thrilling looks. My photos are far from magazine quality, but diagnostic. Russ even managed to get a photo showing both me and a distant but visible condor. After the birds drifted off beyond the horizon, we headed to the Vermilion Cliffs to see the release site. And there were three more condors flying high in the sky. On our way back, we stopped at a gas station near the Little Colorado River, and there were three more. The distances were all too great to get detailed photos, but some of my pictures do allow me to read wing tags that identify individual birds. I've posted some of these images at lauraerickson.blogspot.com. Usually I'm most excited about seeing new birds up close and personal, but I think the most thrilling thing about seeing these condors was that they were doing exactly what I've dreamed for so long about seeing them doing, flying high in the sky, far above us mere humans. Seeing these 8 California condors was far and away the best birthday gift of my entire life, and the November weather did not turn horrible until what was supposed to be the very last day as we crossed back into Minnesota. We got stuck in Faribault overnight, but the trip was worth it. I'm Laura Erickson speaking for the birds.